can't decide and torn between a romantic, comedy, action, or an indie film to watch for the weekend? Well, well, well. Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast is your ultimate guide to the latest movies. Join us as we dissect the latest on the blockbusters. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Movie Podcast, brought to you by GSMC Podcast Network. I'm your host, Stacey.
And I'm your co-host, Sarah.
Today, we're talking about two partnery movies. A guy and a girl kicking butt.
Okay.
Whatever that genre would be. I want more of that genre, whatever it is called.
We should create a name for that genre.
We should.
But unfortunately, I have nothing off the top of my head.
Yeah, me neither. So anyways, the first film is Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is Marvel's newest whatever Marvel film.
Marvel's newest.
We could do a whole episode on Marvel and the coolness of Marvel, but then also the major problems I have with Marvel, to where Marvel is almost becoming a, not quite a swear word, but one of those words you say just in a sort of disgusted
Marvel.
Tone. Yeah. But so anyways, Ant-Man and the Wasp is the sequel to Ant-Man. And I hadn't actually seen the first Ant-Man before I saw Captain America Civil War.
Okay.
And Ant-Man is in Captain America Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I don't actually know anything about this other than that you can shrink to the size of an ant. That's it. That's all I've got.
Seems painful, but...
Well, yeah. So I mean, and if we did it, probably.
Right. He's like the opposite of the Hulk.
But he has the special Ant-Man suit that helps do something. The science in all Marvel films is sort of, we only talk about it when we want to.
Right. I mean, it's science
in quotes. It's not necessarily consistent or real or anywhere near whatever. But the science in Ant-Man especially feels sort of like, this only matters when we want it to. And then when we don't want it to matter, it has no matter whatsoever. Because there's the whole thing in the first Ant-Man where, because of the shrinking, you still maintain your mass or power or something, which is why even when he's an ant, he can, like, punch out full-grown guys.
Oh.
But then there's...
I mean, I know ants themselves can carry loads that are way heavier, but I don't think I'd never heard of them punching out people.
Like, in the first one, when he first gets it, he lands from, like, the top of a bathtub onto the tile below it, so like 2 feet, but he puts a crack in the tile because something. But then we're also carrying around like shrunken tanks and cars in pockets and not dealing with the weight of those. So
I don't know.
Yeah, the science is all sort of whatever. So this one, Ant-Man
and
the Wasp.
It's highly convenient is what it is.
Again, Marvel.
Yeah.
Science. Why is real science this way? Does what I want when I want it to. Stupid science. Get with it. But anyway, so Ant-Man and the Wasp, this one... is referring almost directly to Captain America Civil War.
Okay.
And that it starts with Scott, who is played by Paul Rudd, the Ant-Man, under house arrest because he helped Captain America in Captain America Civil War, which was against the whatever accords that are supposed to sort of put limits on the superheroes.
Mm.
And so he was placed under house arrest. And Hank and Hope, who had developed the Ant-Man technology, are also kind of wanted for arrest because it was their technology. So they're sort of in hiding, and he's been under house arrest and not in contact with them. But then he has a dream about the quantum realm, and he doesn't know it at the time, but it's Hope's mother. And so he calls them saying, I had this really strange dream, and that brings them back in because they're trying to find a way to bring Hope's mother out of the quantum realm.
Of course they are. Okay, sure.
Again, science, when you want it to, and then when you don't, whatever.
I don't know what the quantum realm is or why Hope's mother is there, but okay.
She went subatomic, and that's referred to in the first film. She was already the size of an ant,
okay,
but needed to be smaller, so her suit somehow lets her do that.
Okay,
but when you go subatomic, you enter the quantum realm. And Scott also went subatomic.
So mom was like being the experiment for her daughter, or like
no.
The guinea pig for...
So, actually, it's very interesting, and yet we never specifically say this. Ant-Man and the Wasp were actually originally Hope's father and mother. Her father was the original Ant-Man, and then he brought Scott in to be the new one because after time, wearing the suit and shrinking and growing can sort of mess with you.
Sure.
It can damage your brain or something. And her mother was the original Wasp, but then went subatomic and got lost in the quantum realm. Scott has been to the quantum realm and has actually come back. So they're hoping there's something in Scott's brain that can help them to find her mother and bring her back out. Again, science in this film. Just whatever.
I love movies like this because explaining them in the real world always sounds so ridiculous. Watching them, you're like, yeah, okay, whatever. You just go with it. You know, you're in the moment. But then explaining it to anyone.
Yes.
I'm over here like, okay. Quantum realm. Sure, sure.
Well, and it was actually great because when he does the phone call to say, hey, I had a dream about your mother, he even says, you know, as I'm saying it out loud, it actually sounds kind of ridiculous and not an emergency that I would need to call you for. So never mind. She's like, even as I'm saying it, this is all sorts of crazy. But interestingly, even though, you know, this is a Marvel film and a superhero film, so there are some really cool action scenes. And because he can grow and shrink and then grow beyond a human size, those are played in a very interesting way that you wouldn't necessarily expect from some of the other Marvel heroes. Like, there's the scene in the trailer where he essentially uses a flatbed truck as, like, a scooter because he's, like, 60 feet tall.
Right.
It's adorable, but it's also sort of ridiculous. It's never quite explained, I don't think, why he can grow beyond his regular human size.
That's not sort of Ant-Man to me. That doesn't say Ant-Man to me.
The opposite of Ant-Man, yeah. But he did it in Captain America Civil War, and he evidently knew he could do it, but he didn't do it in the first Ant-Man, so I'm not sure how he knew he could do it. We do get a sort of throwaway line that then comes into play later that doing so draws off of his own energy. So when he did it in Captain America Civil War, he then like slept for 3 days because he was exhausted.
Right.
So that does come into play later, but it's just sort of like, but why? And in this film, his suit is having problems. So he grows and shrinks sometimes not when he means to.
Oh, that's a problem.
But it makes for a wonderfully adorable scene involving him and Hope sneaking into his daughter's school. It's very cute and funny.
Okay.
And I was just like, and interestingly, that was part of what I liked most about this film was not the action scenes, even though some of them are really cool. The villain in this film is Ghost, which is a character who doesn't grow and shrink, but rather can phase, sort of.
Okay.
And again, science. So sure. she can walk through walls. And things. And so when you're fighting her, you know, you can't always hit her because then she's, what is that even called? Not see through, but walk through, hit through.
Oh.
Not physically there.
Yeah, she's
phasing. I'm just going to go with phasing.
Just go with that. There's a word, but I can't think of it right now.
So that makes for some cool scenes, particularly with her and Wasp. And I actually, people talk about the first time they meet scene, but I actually like the second time they meet because by then we know what her powers are. And so you get the scene where she's phasing in and out and Wasp is growing and shrinking. And that actually makes for a really cool fight scene. But beyond the action scenes, I actually really cared more in this film for the side characters. You do get a lot of the same side characters and played by the same actors. So you get his daughter, Cassie, and she's still a major part of this. And Judy Greer, still her mother, and her cop fiance, who's now much more friendly with Scott than he was in the first film. But then you also have his ex-con friends, and they're actually trying to set up a security consultant business or something.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really serious because it's very hard for them as ex-cons to actually get work.
Right.
And so Scott's sort of priorities are torn because he wants to help Hank and Hope, but he's still technically under house arrest, so he shouldn't be doing anything with Hank and Hope. And he wants to make sure that his business gets off the ground, but that's distracting him from the Hank and Hope situation. And they're already not very, they bring him in because they need him, but they're pissed at him for going and fighting with Captain America and getting them in trouble.
Right.
So they're already like, we don't really like you. And you're now like, you know, sort of having divided loyalties. He's not on their good side for a good portion of the film. But Louise, especially in the first film, there's a couple of scenes where you get Louise telling stories about like how he heard about the job that essentially introduces Scott to Hank. And you get it where he's telling it, but you see the actual people in the flashback, but they're mouthing what he's saying almost essentially, my sister really likes the show Drunk History.
Right.
It's a bit like that, where, you know, he's saying it in his very, you know, his style. And then you see, like, the really serious people saying it. I actually that kind of annoyed me in the first film. You had two of them in the first film, and I was like, okay, get on with it. And even the characters always say, get to the point. Details have nothing to do with what we're talking about. Get to the point.
Right.
In this film, you get that story scene again because it was evidently very popular with audiences. But in this one, he's been given a truth serum, and there's a whole ridiculous argument over whether or not it's a truth serum, which is just super funny. I love his little con buddies. They're so much great. They're so much fun. But then you get to him telling this story about, like, how he met Scott and how Scott met Hank and Hope. And I was like, you know what? I actually kind of hope this story goes on. I know we're going to have to end it at some point, but I actually like the way you're doing the story this time, that I don't want to get to the why we're really telling it. Just continue with your absolute, like, ridiculous. And you actually see Scott and Hope again having to do the mouthing that he's doing. And this shows up in one of the trailers where it's like the story of Ant-Man as told by Louise. If you haven't seen, it's not the whole clip, and I wish I could find the whole clip, but of course it's not online yet. But if you haven't seen that trailer, you should really go and watch it, because at one point he's like telling, you know, about how Scott met Hope, and he's like, look at my hair, I'm on business. And she has to mouth that. And it's just like, oh my gosh, please stop.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so I like the side characters almost much more than the action scenes in this, to the point where I'm like, I don't even care. Like, not that I didn't care. The action scenes are still cool, even though I do feel kind of sad for the ants, because they're just used. Like, there's one scene, and it's, you see, like, a millisecond of this in the trailer, where Scott is trying to get onto a flying ant, but a seagull comes and eats it. And that actually happens. He goes through about like three ants, because, and the seagulls keep eating them.
Well, good for, like, the seagulls, I guess. Right? But
I'm like, but oh, he keeps naming the ants in terrible punny names. But I'm like, okay, but the ant, but okay, that ant's dead, and we don't care about that ant, and you just killed all those ants, and you're taking away their free will and making them do things, and fine, that looks really cool when they can, like, you know, carry things or form letters or whatever, but what about the ants? Which is very strange for me, because if they're in my house, it's not what about the ants.
I was just going to say,
where's the bug spray?
You're not really fond of critters that crawl like that.
But those ants aren't where they can bring me things I need. Or, you know.
Oh, you just want to use the ants.
Or pretend to be me. There's that one point where they put an ant in Scott's home ankle bracelet to make it seem like he's still there, and the ant is programmed to do what Scott does. So it, like, stays in bed till whatever, and it spends 5 hours in front of the TV, and it plays the drum kit that he has, because
that's a talented ant.
Well, I mean, all these ants are. They've been scientifically
right,
whatever, science. But anyways, so I much prefer the side characters. There's another side character of Jimmy Woo, who is evidently, I only found this out later, from the S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show.
Oh, is he?
Which I don't watch, and this is
my husband watches it, but I'm looking at him trying to figure out. I mean, I pop in and out of him watching it, so
you're like, he maybe is from. I might have seen him somewhere on one of the gazillion shows your husband watches.
I vaguely think I remember that. You know what I need? Hmm. And this is off topic, but it's on topic, because I don't unfortunately have time to watch all of the Marvel movies. I would love to just, like, sit down for a week and
watch all of them.
But what I need instead is a Marvel encyclopedia, which probably exists.
I'm sure it does.
But I need the Marvel encyclopedia that gives me all of the characters, what they've been in, how they cross over, how they tie in, what their backstories are, what's canon, all of that stuff. Because, you know, A, I love books, and then when I can watch a Marvel movie in not in context and break out my handy dandy encyclopedia and be like, oh.
But I feel like the whole how they tie into everything would start looking like one of those conspiracy map things with connecting yarns to pins.
That would be awesome.
It would start looking that sort of crazy, because he's in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but he's in this because I don't know reasons, but I actually love him in this, because his rapport with Scott, and again, I didn't, of all the, like, sort of solo characters for Marvel, Ant-Man was one of the ones I couldn't care about least before the film came out, because it was just like, how are you possibly going to make that power cool? He goes to the sides of an ant. But what made the first one work and what makes this one work is the casting. Mm-hmm. Paul Rudd is fantastic as Scott. I can't imagine another actor who could have made Ant-Man actually enjoyable if you didn't have Paul Rudd in that role. Jimmy Woo, this character, his rapport with Scott is great because he's supposed to be this like serious FBI guy who's trying to catch him, but then Scott sort of keeps pulling one over him. So like when they first meet in the first part, Scott's explaining that, you know, he wasn't trying to escape. His foot just went out the boundary because he was playing with his daughter. Do you know how hard it is to entertain a 10-year-old? And then he brings out magic tricks because that's what he's been learning to entertain his daughter. And Jimmy Woo's like, yeah, okay, I don't believe you. But wait, how did you do that magic trick? Dude, I love you. And I really kind of hope you're in the next one, even though I don't actually care too much whether there is a third Ant-Man. One. But if there is a third Ant-Man, I will be pissed if you don't have like a sizable role dealing with Scott just because your relationship is great. Like there's a part at the end where they're dealing with him, which I won't spoil, but that was one of my favorite scenes in the whole film, was the final sort of dialogue between the two of them as Scott's getting they're dealing with his ankle bracelet. But at the end of this film is good until about the final 20 minutes or so. And then it starts getting a bit confusing because there are multiple parties trying to get, there's a lot going on in the final scene. There's Scott and Hope and Louise are trying to get back their shrunken building that's been stolen from them. But they're dealing with both Ghost and then this total other side character villain guy. But then Hank's in Quantum Realm and it's just like, I was like, I get where everyone is. And at the same time, I'm confused about where everyone is. There's a lot going on. And then the ending, there are, of course, credits stings in this because it's a Marvel film.
Right, right.
I think they're all contractually obligated to have credits stings in Marvel films. There's one in the middle and then there's one at the end. The one in the middle makes me feel like at least 10% of why Marvel makes these films is just to frustrate people. It's probably like 90% for money, but then we also like that extra perk of frustrating people, like stock options. It's like, because you see something happens in that sting that I won't reveal that sort of ties it in with the bigger Marvel picture, and I'm just like, ah! And that was literally the entire audience. Save for I saw this with my mother, and she didn't understand because she hadn't seen the other film.
Sure.
But the people that had were just like, oh, what? Oh. And then the final credits thing, you don't actually need to see, but there's a title scene at the end. And it's just like, so wait, what? And that ties in with the frustration. I was just like, okay, so what you're saying is, once again, I need to see other Marvel films because you are annoying.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So very enjoyable, but this is starting to become a thing. And this was the case with Thor Ragnarok, too, where I almost don't care about the action scenes, and I just want to get more with the funny side characters. Even though these are superhero films, and therefore the action scenes should draw most
right,
of my interest.
Right.
It's more, let's go with the funny side characters. That actually is the more enjoyable part of the film for me.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
All right. Good to know.
All right. So, we're going to take a short break. Stay tuned.
Watching TV has changed over time. Streaming has become the new norm. That's why Golden State Media Concepts television podcast dives headfirst to the world of cord cutting. Want to be on the loop of what's hot in Netflix? Or if it's not a preference, what about original shows in Hulu? We've got you covered. Join us as we fill in the blanks and talk about movies to stream and what show you should be binging. This is the Golden State Media Concepts television podcast.
Welcome back to the GSMC Movie Podcast. Our second film today is Mad Max Fury Road. And I wanted to see this because from the trailers for Ant-Man and the Wasp, it looked a lot like most of the action was from the Wasp. Mm. And so I was like,
okay.
I knew that for Mad Max Fury Road, a lot of the action came from Charlize Theron's character. So I was like, okay, that kind of fits. The girl's pretty awesome also. Equal partner guy. No, actually, I'm not even sure why this is called a Mad Max movie, unless it was just like the simplest way to tie it in. Because I'd seen the first Mad Max, but I hadn't seen the second or third one because I found the first one just be like, what?
Okay, side note. My best friend in third grade had Mad Max at her birthday party.
The actual person?
Or? No, the movie. We watched it. Oh, okay. It was either new one, you know, VHS. Mm-hmm. Let's just age me again. But I hated it. I mean, I'm 9.
Yeah.
I hated it. So I have never watched it again as an adult, and I refuse to watch any of the others because I was like, this sucks.
Yeah.
It could be, you know, that's, again, from a 9-year-old perspective. I admit that. But
I mean, I was a little older than 9 when I watched it, and I also thought it sucked. But part of that is, A, it was very weird for me to see Mel Gibson with short hair. Because my experience with Mel Gibson was Lethal Weapon,
yeah.
The Patriot, and Braveheart.
Yeah.
There's Mel Gibson with red short hair? What? No. No. And he has a very short haircut in the first Mad Max.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But then also, the problem with Mad Max, it's definitely its own world, but it kind of just throws you in and only explains so much, so you get that you're in this sort of not quite post-apocalyptic world, but where, like, kind of water is very scarce, and that's then made essentially everybody crazy, not for, like, science reasons, but just because society broke down or
they're
something.
They're all dehydrated and cranky.
So they start getting crazy, and the way they... Yeah, so even the first one is crazy. This one is kind of even crazier. Max ends up at this city that is run by a guy called Immortan Joe, who wears a breathing mask.
Okay.
And like half the people in the city are covered in white dust. We don't ever really find out why. They're bald and covered in white dust. And Charlize Theron is supposed to drive the war rig to pick up fuel, but instead has actually kidnapped Immortan Joe's wives because he has 5 wives that he keeps locked up in literally like a safe vault on the top of a mountain. And there's something about Valhalla, and, you know, they believe they'll be reborn if they die in a great act while chasing down these wives.
Sounds even weirder than you trying to explain Ant-Man and the Wasp.
It is so crazy. Like, by the end of the film, I only vaguely understood their belief system. I didn't really ever learn any of the wives' names, so I just started referring to them in my head as, like, Zoe Kravitz and Rosie, what's her name, and then the blonde one, the brunette one, and the redhead. That's
how you remember. Okay.
And they actually have, like, really strange names anyways, so it doesn't help. But it's just, yeah, there's a whole lot of craziness in this film that we only vaguely explain. Like, I think the closest that gets explained is the Valhalla thing. Immortan Joe has this sort of cult of personality, so he's considered almost a god, and he's in control of the water, and he distributes it in, like, literally the most inefficient way ever, in that he turns it on, and it flows out of these 3 really large tubes that are, like, 50-plus feet up in the air. And that's how you get... And I'm like, dude, 99% of that just ended up on the ground. How are people getting... What?
Wow.
What is this
sounds
world?
Extraordinarily inefficient.
It's so inefficient. And I think part of what people like about the Mad Max series is the just absolute craziness of it. Because when we get into what essentially this film is, 90% of crazy road trip, you start getting people on really strange made cars, including, which I actually kind of love, there's one where they ride out to try and stop Charlize Theron. There is a guy playing metal guitar on top of one of the rigs.
Oh, like you do.
Because we have to have live music as we go into battle. Of course. Sure, and the guitar throws flames because of course it does.
Sure. I mean, when I go into battle in my futuristic sci-fi, right? I always hire a guitarist.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even have to
hire because he worships me and does whatever I say.
Even better.
The cars in this are made to look sort of crazy, partly because that's the part of the world. But when we get Mad Max into this, and he feels very much not in this for the first, like, third or so, he's been kidnapped by whatever this society is around Immortan Joe and is made to be a blood bank because I'm not sure why these people need blood infusions, but they do.
And apparently so, they need his.
Yeah. He's a O negative, so he's a universal donor.
Oh, okay.
And he is given to Nicholas Holt's character, who is a war boy, which is one of the bald, white, dusted people who rides into battle for Morton Joe for some reason. And when it's found out that Charlize Theron has actually kind of gone rogue, the war boys all saddle up to go out and bring her back, or at least to bring the wives back, because that's what we want. He wants to go, but he's currently in the middle of a blood transfusion, but he's like, Mad Max is considered sort of wild, and so he has a muzzle on, and he's like, that's great, I've got wild blood running in me, I'd be great at this. And so he's allowed to go for some reason, but they have to take his blood bank with them, so they have to take Max with them, and they tie him to the front of the car because I don't know, like, it seems all sorts of inefficient. Like, A, I don't know that you can see to drive since your blood bank's in front of you, and B, considering how like important your blood bank seems, why would you put him outside and exposed when you're going on this thing where cars are crashing and blowing up and just what? What is the, and again, I don't know that there's supposed to be a rationality in this film, because it's all sorts of crazy world. We all clearly, without water, become psychotic.
Sure. Evidently. Sure. And, you know, I'm looking at IMDb right now, and you're right. I think they were all either high or drunk when they cast, or when, not when they cast, when they wrote people's names.
Yeah.
Whoever wrote this. Because, yes, the wives are, well, there's one guy whose name is Rictus Erectus.
Yeah.
And then the wives are Toast, the knowing. The splendid, I don't even know, and Garha, and whatever.
Yep.
Capable, she has the most normal name.
the
Dag and Cheeto the Fragile.
After it was Zoe Kravitz plays Toast.
Yep.
And Rosie, what's her name from
Huntington Whiteley?
Yeah, the one from the Transformers films plays
the splendid Engahard.
Whatever. And she's actually heavily pregnant, so she's, in my head it was like Zoe Kravitz, the pregnant one, and then the blonde, the brunette, and the redhead.
Right.
I that was how I thought of them the entire film. And Charlize Theron's character is the Imperator Furiosa.
Yes.
I don't know what an Imperator is, and it's never explained, but it is suggested that there's more than one.
Oh.
Because when Nicholas Holt finds out that this whole thing is going on and he wants to join in, he learns that an Imperator has gone rogue. Oh, an Imperator, which one? Implying there's more than one.
Sure, sure.
But then we don't send the Imperators out after Charlize Theron for some reason.
Well, even when you said Immortan Joe, I was like, what is Immortan? I mean,
yeah. Nothing is explained in this film, and clearly the like set designers and costume designers were like, just be weird. That was all they were told, was just be weird. Be a little strange. We like that. So anyways, Charlize Theron is driving this rig, which has the brides in it, and she's trying not to get caught by the all of Immortan Joes. They're called war boys. I don't know.
Max, hey, that makes more sense than some things in this movie. I mean, if they're male and they're going to war.
Except I don't know where they normally have to go to war.
Oh, okay.
Because we do get two side like war leaders in this, along with Immortan Joe, and they call him brother, but I'm not sure if they're actual brothers or that's just like a compadre,
like
sort of
fraternal
thing.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's a little confusing because she was supposed to be going to Gastown or whatever to get fuel, which you can see in a straight shot from whatever town they're in. And it sounded like one of the brothers runs Gastown. But so I'm like, what do you ever need war boys for? Save for the like crazy people on the rocks, which takes a while to get to. Who is ever like threatening you that you need war boys, since it's a straight shot to the town also controlled by you?
Hmm.
But we have all these war boys, like seriously, almost save for the like peasants in the mud who try to get water. All the males in this film seem to be war boys, if they're not Immortan Joe's sons. So it's a very strange film, but the action's pretty cool. I know it got a lot of buzz because most of the action scenes were actually physically shot. They're not CGI.
Mm.
So you're getting a lot of car races and car crashes. And again, these cars are already crazy looking. Those are pretty cool. I actually think what the filmmaker is doing sometimes with color is more interesting. There's one scene where they're supposed to be driving at night, and the wives are in the front of the war rig. I have no idea how to call this. With Max as he's driving, they have a lamp, so you can see them in light, but then Max, you can see, but it's blue. Like, it's not even dark. It looks very cool. I'm not sure why they chose to do that. And there's one scene where it goes from color, black and white, and color real quick. Not sure why they chose to do that either. And again, not sure exactly how this is a Mad Max film. Save for there's the character named Max, and the world is still absolutely crazy as it was in the first one. He's not in this too much. When he finally gets away from his war boy and starts interacting with Charlize Theron and the wives, we get a bit more of him, but there's one scene where he actually goes off and does something action-y and like kills one of the brothers in the car, and we don't see it. It's just done at night, and you see through the fog an explosion, and then you see a shadow coming back, and clearly he's, you know, been successful because he comes back with a bunch of weapons and he's alive. But I'm like, that would have actually been a cool scene to see. And we just don't get that for some reason. We do get a lot with Charlize Theron. She seems very... This should have been her film. Like, I get we have to call it Mad Max because it's part of the series. But really, this should have been Furiosa's film. She's absolutely wonderful. The wives are pretty cool, too. Which is quite amazing because, again, Rosie's character is the most heavily pregnant. But she's the one kind of... doing the most in the first battle and like climbing onto the side of the car, and I'm just like,
wow,
should you be doing that? Like, there are four other women here. They can't, not that one of them can climb along the side of the car, really? Okay, whatever. But yeah, and then at the end, it's not exactly set up for a sequel, but you know, certain characters are still alive and other characters aren't, so it's like, okay, we could go on with that story. I would much rather have a like prequel explaining Furiosa and how she came to be where she is, because we get a bit of her backstory. She's not originally from the Morton Joe's city, whatever that's called. She was brought there and then, you know, rebelled and led the wives off. I would so love to know her backstory because she is so awesome in this. I don't care about Mad Max, and clearly the film doesn't care too much about him either.
Apparently not.
So yeah, weird. Don't even try. If you're going to watch it, just go along and accept that you are not going to understand like 90% of the world, because it is just crazy. Yes.
Okay. Good to know. Thanks.
Fun though. So on that note, we're going to end for today. Thank you for listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.